Support for the Exchange podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, as we anticipate remarks from Governor Chris Sununu during his State of the State address, we're talking with town managers, each from a different region of the state, to get their impressions of the Granite State at this moment in time. We'll find out what's happening in these communities, both their opportunities and their challenges, and we'll ask what they're hoping to hear from the governor today. And we want to hear from you as well. What's the state of the state from your perspective? What's the state of your town? And what, if anything, do you hope the state can do for your town? Email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And with us for a robust conversation this hour are Jeannie Forrester, town manager of Tilton, who's also a select board member in Meredith, Sharon Penny, town manager of Colebrook, and Kevin Smith, town manager of Londonderry. Thank you all very much for being here today.
Thanks for having us, Peter.
So much to talk about today, and since we're on the heels of the primary, I wanted to get your take on how the primary went off in your towns. How was the election operated? Now, maybe we'll start with you, Jeannie.
I thought we did a very nice job, our moderator and election officials in Tilton and in Meredith. Everything went off very smoothly. We had high voter turnout, and polls opened at 7, closed at 7, and it was a good day.
Good day. Good day, Kevin.
It was a great day. You know, things went off pretty much without a hitch, and considering we're the single largest polling location in the state, one location for 19,000 registered voters, there's not a lot of room for error, but we've got a great team of professionals, everyone from the moderator, the town clerk. We have a huge cadre of volunteers that have been doing it now for years. They know the system. They know how to get people in and out. And one thing I will mention is we're a test location right now for using these electronic poll pads to check people in. And so people can come in. They don't have to look for the letter where their last name is anymore and which station to go to. They can go to anyone that's got a poll pad. We had 10 people with these electronic poll pads. And you go in, you get checked in electronically. There's paper backup. The Secretary of State's office made sure we were having paper backups to all of it. But it really made the process very efficient, got people in and out.
Great. Okay. And Sharon, what about you? How'd things go in Colebrook?
Well, they went pretty well. Actually, our backup of paper is our primary for the primary, and the paper system worked pretty well in small towns like Colebrook. And also in Franconia, where I actually live, you find very dedicated people who have probably, for the most part, done this for years and have counted those ornery pieces of paper with very little problem. So, you know, the old system works. I know it's not feasible. You'd still be there counting, Peter, Kevin, you know, if it were Londonderry. But things went well. They did.
Great. Okay. I did have to check in because it's just people still probably thinking about it a little bit, and you have firsthand knowledge of that. So I wanted to ask that. But I also want to ask, just by way of starting off our conversation, about things from the local perspective, what the main topics of discussion are in your towns. And we can start with you, Sharon. What are people in Colebrook most concerned about or talking about the most at this point?
Well, there are several issues. I mean, one of the perennial issues in the North Country, as everyone knows, this is not new news, you know, is the state of the economy, jobs, employment. It sounds like the same old whiny line, but it's actually a reality. Our North Country towns are very far away. The transportation system is not anything, you know, that gives us a lot of expediency in terms of getting from point A to point B. It's just everything takes longer up there. You know, there's fewer people. You know, we do have internet connections now, but there's still the same challenges that we've been speaking about, you know, for North Country towns for the last 20, 25 years.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Kevin? What about Londonderry?
Yeah, well, it should be as no surprise. It's probably a little bit of a different story. You know, I mean, most of the southern tier in New Hampshire, the economy is just booming right now, whether you're in the greater Manchester region, the seacoast. It's almost an embarrassment of riches with, you know, companies wanting to move there, to expand there. But it is creating challenges. You've got housing stock issues. Demand is very high and the inventory is very low. And because of that, it's really driving the values of homes. And so people looking to the whole thing of a starter home really doesn't exist anymore in southern New Hampshire. You know, new construction is starting at $500,000. And that's very difficult for a lot of people to afford if they're looking to purchase a new home. But again, you know, a lot of that's being driven by the fact that you have a lot of new jobs in that area of the state. Locally, what we're dealing with in addition to the housing stock issue is traffic issues as well, and how we're going to go about mitigating traffic issues on the secondary roadways going forward.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Jeannie?
I would agree with Kevin, especially in Tilton. We just had our five-year revaluation. So assessments, we saw assessments in the residential housing go up quite a bit, some as much as 60-70%.
Which is good for homeowners maybe, but not great for people trying to get into the market?
Well, I think the homeowners would tell you no, because while you would—
The taxes go up too.
Well, you would expect that your tax rate would come down, and ours did, but it didn't go down as much as the values went up. And the commercial real estate saw an increase too, but not as much as the housing saw their increase. As a consequence, folks' tax bills did go up. People were very, very upset. Our assessor explained that, and I think Kevin just said it, is because there's such a demand for housing and there's very little stock. So that's a big issue in Tilton right now. In Meredith, I think it is it's a destination community. We're actually doing very well in terms of what we see coming for the economy. We have a lot of great events that happen that bring people in and help our restaurants and our hotels. Big issue concern, I think, is the school funding issue. How's that going to play out? We were a donor town before. We don't want to be a donor town again. So there's concerns about that. And as a selectman, we are looking at that, watching that.
Mm-hmm. So let's stay on that housing subject for a moment. Sharon, you wanted to weigh in on that?
I think it's very interesting that it's almost like yin and yang. We have the exact opposite. We could help you. You could help us. Where is the disconnect? The
well,
disparity.
How do you mean that? How could you help each other?
Well, that is the question. Okay. But I mean, we have a willing workforce. We don't have traffic issues per se. We have access issues in terms of the main and essentially only route is Route 3, U.S. Route 3. We have tons of housing stock. It's very affordable. The tax rate is high. It's right around where Berlin's is. You know, it's 31 and a little bit of change per thousand. We just had a reval in Colebrook. It's a good thing if, you know, the valuation goes up a bit, because it has been kind of floating down. I don't know. That is the question. I'll throw it back to my colleagues. I mean, how, or I'll throw it out to the governor. How can we take all these resources that this wonderful state has and amalgamate them and do an average so everybody wins?
It seems like there are so many people, there are fewer opportunities for housing, right? I mean, that seems to be the case, at least in Londonderry, right? Like there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of jobs.
Sure.
So housing, hard to come by.
It is.
Right. Affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, and we have in Londonderry, we have three workforce housing developments that have gone in the last 5 years, probably close to 500 units. The rents for most of these units are starting somewhere between $1,300 and $1,400 a month. And part of that's driven by the fact that Londonderry is in western Rockingham County, and Rockingham County is the most, you know, per capita of income is the most affluent in the state. And so we're kind of almost penalized because of that measurement, in that the rents are a lot higher even on quote-unquote affordable housing or workforce housing. To Sharon's point, certainly if the infrastructure is a big deal, especially for the North Country, if you can make the ease of access of getting from point A to point B, that's what's going to drive people into those areas. You know, if you look at Londonderry prior to I-93 going in, we didn't have anywhere near the population growth that we've seen now in the last 50, 60 years in Londonderry, especially now with the widening of I-93, making it even easier for people to get into southern New Hampshire. The widening of when 101 happened 20 years ago, going to the Seacoast area. It's made it easier for people to get to these places such that companies have moved there and the population's gone up.
So, Sharon, what would you want to happen to make it easier to get to Colebrook in the same way that it's easier to get to Londonderry?
In a previous incarnation, I was a transportation planner working with DOT and the regional planning commissions, and the interstate ends in Littleton. I don't think you're going to see the interstate extended to Colebrook. What I'm saying is that Route 3 is two lanes. It is all the truck traffic, both commercial and logging traffic. It's commuter traffic. It's delivery traffic. It's snowmobile traffic, trailers, ATVs. I was behind a couple of combiners last summer from Quebec that were jobbed out to cut the fields. They were going 18 miles an hour. I mean, I'm just saying this because it's such... I mean, it is truly multimodal, but not in a good way.
We can hear the frustration in your voice. It's difficult, especially in a morning like this,
70
right?
70 miles is a long drive when you're stuck behind someone who's going way under the speed limit.
And then add weather like we're having today.
Precisely, yeah.
And it can be quite difficult. So it seems like in the absence of any kind of major transportation right. overhaul to get from, you know, southern points to Colebrook, what would be the motivating factor for people to go to Colebrook? In other words, why do people want to go? What's so great about Colebrook?
As we all know, it's God's country. It's gorgeous. I mean, you can have access to two states, Maine, Vermont, and a foreign country, which is Canada, Quebec. It's less than 10 miles from my office. There's a lot of cross-border interaction, if you will. I mean, that's just the norm up there. It always was, particularly when you had, let's say, for example, the Balsams or Ethan Allen Furniture Company operating. That was historic. You know, you lived in one place, you crossed the border, you went home at lunchtime or dinner time. As I said earlier, we do have good internet connection, and there are a lot of, I would say, recreation and niche marketing based ventures going on up there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are, believe it or not, the Colebrook area and the entire North Country, I think I could speak to this hopefully accurately. We are still, believe it or not, suffering the decline of the 100-year papermaking industry. That was a 100-year economy. So it's 20 years later. There's still a ripple effect. I mean, it's probably getting down to the bottom of it. About 12 years or so ago, ballpark it, you lost the Balsams, you lost Tillotson Rubber, and Ethan Allen downsized quite a bit. So in a very small population area, when you lose, say, 1,000 jobs, I mean, Colebrook's only 2,100 people, and it's the megalopolis. It's the service center of Upper Coos. So, you know, there's some challenges there. How do you do it? Marketing, I guess the pressure that comes, you know, the bulge that comes up from the southern part of the state. Hopefully, you know, working from home, any internet-connected businesses or small entrepreneurial businesses. You're not going to see huge manufacturing. I know Ethan Allen is on the uptick, and I'm really happy for them, but the thousands of jobs thing, I don't think that's, at least in our neck of the woods, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So Jeannie, what are your thoughts on that when it comes to, you know, the advantages of Meredith and Tilton? I mean, Tilton, of course, right off the highway, Meredith a little farther away, and yet people seem to want to make their way up to both Tilton and Meredith.
Right. And as I said earlier, you know, Meredith is a destination, and people will get on 104 to get into Meredith. And the traffic in the summer is horrendous, but people still want to come. You know, you have the fishing derby, which we just had last week. You had pond hockey the week before. We've got another pond hockey tournament coming up. Then you have the summer season with all kinds of events. So, you know, we have our challenges, too, mostly traffic when it comes to Meredith. Then you switch to Tilton, and while our population is only 3,600, daily we get 10,000 cars coming through because of the outlets. And for us, the challenge is, and one of the things that I'm focused on economic development for the downtown is how do we get people when they come off 93 to turn left if they're heading, you know, north, or to turn right when they're heading south and go into the downtown. So it's a focus we'll be working on to try to help the businesses be more successful in our downtown. But, you know, I think to Sharon's, as I listen to Sharon talk about Colebrook, I think it's a marketing effort on your part as well. People really now, you have internet, people are being driven by quality of life. Mm-hmm. You said it's God's country. Yeah. So you really need to be, I'm not telling you what to do, but I just, when I think about when I was in Plymouth, and I think you were in Plymouth, and the hospital had such a hard time finding doctors, it was that effort to promote quality of life in Plymouth. And the same thing I would think should happen in Colebrook.
Well, you know, actually it is. The Chamber of Commerce is fairly active. We do have Borders Development Company, which is bringing in, you know, some small companies predominantly from Canada. Tillotson Rubber has had a small but solid resurgence in that the company has reformed itself. It's now American Performance Polymers. But to Jeannie's point, we now have the Great Northwoods Arts Association, right, which has taken over the old Our Lady of Grace Shrine, which is really taking off, which links to Lancaster. I mean, in the North Country, you have this network. It's small. It looks disparate, but it's not. You know, we leapfrog every half hour of driving. You're connected to your neighbors. So it's a wide net.
So think about, Meredith, and we even have it in Tilton, the second homeowner market.
Right.
And so if you can market to people who come up there in the winter to do the snowmobiling or the ATVs and convince them or market to them, buy your second home here, right? Then you're going to have that tax base that you need.
We do have a lot of that. We do. Yeah. But there again, it's seasonal. And you know,
that doesn't matter. As long as you
well, no,
taxes.
But I mean, if
they own the house here,
well,
they're, yeah.
They're, no, well, the tax base, yeah, no, but I mean, in terms of if there's not a lot of snow, then you don't get that secondary impact of money with the restaurants. And believe it or not, until very recently, there hasn't been certainly as much snow as last year, so it's been kind of up and down.
So we're really fickle. We need to be listening to Kevin to tell us how to be successful.
I guess so.
Well,
I wanted
to enjoying this conversation.
I wanted to bring you in, Kevin, because Sharon and Jeannie were talking a little bit about tourism and the things that bring people into town. We heard from you about Londonderry's, you know, being, you know, an economic driver. There's lots of jobs there. There's lots of housing there for people who can afford it. What about tourism in Londonderry? Is that a big draw, or is it kind of a bedroom community?
It's a very big draw, especially in the fall. Londonderry has four working apple orchards. Mm-hmm. You know, Londonderry's done a really good job over the last 50 years, 100 years really, of balancing its rural roots with becoming modern. And so, as I mentioned, we have four working apple farms, all of which have easements on them, conservation easements, so they can never be developed. We have over 1,000 acres of pristine conservation land that's been tied up so people can take hikes whenever they want, not hear a car around. At the same time, we have all the amenities people would want to do their shopping there, to eat in town. And it's a great commuter location, as I said. We have two exits off of I-93, soon to be a third one with exit 4A. Manchester-Boston Regional Airport is located in Londonderry, so we have ease of access to the airport. And then there's the Airport Access Road, Route 3. And so when you combine all of those things, we believe it's a great quality of life in Londonderry because, as I said, you have the rural charm of Londonderry 300 years ago. We were founded in 1719, but you have all the amenities of modern-day life as well.
I think it would be hard-pressed to find a town manager who would say, there is not a good quality of life in my town.
Oh, no.
But
definitely.
I see all your points.
They're not
going to
last too long if they don't say that.
Exactly.
Put it that
right. They have to be good advocates for their town. We got this comment from Martin. I wanted to get your take on it. So Martin wrote in to ask, is the cost of waste management on your radar? Just this week, a landfill in Bethlehem withdrew their expansion application after the State Department of Environmental Services changed their interpretation of public benefit. This means the landfill in Bethlehem will close in 14 months. Are the town managers aware of this issue, and do they have an idea of how much the waste management costs will increase once trucks have to go to Berlin and Rochester, increasing transportation costs?
We're very much aware. Again, as I said, Colebrook's a very small town, but we have a municipal water system. We have a transfer station. I did get the memo on the tipping fees going up. We do send our stuff to Mount Carberry. We do have mandatory recycling. However, it's as we know, the markets are down in terms of recyclables. I think we need to preach the gospel of recycling pretty heavy again. I mean, for a myriad of reasons. But yeah, that's the next crisis that's coming down.
Yeah, I mean, it's we just renegotiated our entire waste management contract based on the recyclable costs going up because the commodity value has gone down, especially with China. And part of what's driven that is we're trying to get people to recycle more by making it easier and going to single stream. Well, it turns out that single stream requires a lot more labor costs, which has driven the commodity value down. So we have to kind of go back to our basics of how we recycle. And but it is an issue I think most municipalities are dealing with right now.
Jeannie, what do you think?
I would agree. It's pretty much they've said it all. It is something we're looking at in Tilton and Meredith and adjusting for that, trying to figure out how to get ahead of it.
Well, Martin, thank you very much for the question. This is The Exchange on NHPR, and today we are talking with town managers from different regions of the state about how they would describe the state of their towns and of the state. We'd love to hear from you on this. What's the state of your city or town? What would you like to ask town managers about? What towns are concerned about, what things they have to be aware of coming over the horizon, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email your comments. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello in for Laura Kanoy. And today on the program, we are getting a feel for conditions across the state from folks in the know, town managers from different regions. And in this part of the program, we want to speak to our guests about the physical environment, open space, land conservation, land use, recreation, and pollution, all topics up for discussion. And we want to hear from you as well. Call us to let us know about how your city or town is doing. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We're also going to be talking about education later in the program, so those questions are fair as well. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Here with us in the studio, Jeannie Forrester, town manager of Tilton, select board member in Meredith, Sharon Penny, town manager of Colebrook, and Kevin Smith, town manager of Londonderry. So as far as the environment goes, I want to ask you all, what kind of debates are you seeing in your town when it comes to open space and land conservation? Maybe we'll start with you, Kevin.
Yeah, so as I mentioned during the last segment, with all of the development we've had, there's been a lot of talk, too, about how do we make sure that we still conserve as much land as we possibly can so that we can deal with the growth as it happens, if it puts more kids into the school system, as there becomes a strain on services. We want to make sure we're on top of that as well. And so we've done a good job of putting a lot of land, as I said, thousands of acres into conservation. And we've also put easements on those areas of town that we want to protect as well. So from that aspect, while we've had the development, at the same time, land stewardship has been very important to us.
Jeannie, what do you think?
So two different communities. In Meredith, land conservation open space is high importance to the town, and we've done really well. We've just completed we had Page Pond 1 and Page Pond 2. We've got a lot of easements in Meredith, and it is a priority for us. In Tilton, doesn't appear to be as much relative to open space. When you talk about the environment and the concerns, the big issue that we seem to be getting hit with is solar and putting solar projects on open space that we have now, which is a concern to, it seems, a lot of folks in Tilton. They don't, are not really supportive, it seems, of having solar on the open space. They want to keep the fields open. They don't want solar.
I'm sure, Jeannie, it's funny you bring this up, because have you found that in general most people seem to be in favor of renewable energy and they love the idea of it until they find out where it's going and they're like, maybe not.
Yeah.
So, okay, seems familiar to everyone. Is that a familiar sentiment to you, Sharon?
Oh, only because I used to be a land use planner and NIMBY was the buzzword, you know, not my backyard.
Used to be a land use planner, used to work in transportation. What haven't you done?
I don't know.
Well, Sharon, as far as land conservation and land use in Colebrook, what's the story there?
Well, obviously, it's the other side of the story. A lot of open space, a lot of land. A lot of folks do take advantage of current use in terms of their property taxes. The stresses, if you can even call it that, in Colebrook on land use is the stress, the primary one, would be property owner rights versus recreation versus motorized recreation. I think you know where I'm going with that.
ATVs,
yeah.
Four-wheelers.
Yeah. And it reminds me so much of the early 70s, and now I'm dating myself, or late 60s, when the snowmobile industry was just trying, it was nascent, and it was trying to self-regulate. So, I'm sure everybody had Warren articles last year. We did also in terms of ATVs on town roads. But, and this is a little off point, so I'll make it quick. We're seeing a lot of uptick in human-powered recreation. There is an initiative in the Colebrook area with a cross-border with Quebec and Vermont. It's called human-powered recreation, which sounds like a no-brainer, but, the focus is shifting back on biking and trails. And with some funding from the Tillotson Foundation, USDA, Rural Development. So that's kind of nice because it's making the cohort, the consortium of folks involved, look at the open space that's available on several borders and try to at least get an idea of categorizing it. So we can start to inventory it. So therein lies the protections, hopefully.
I see. Yeah. Listeners, if you have questions or comments, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And let's talk to Roberta in North Conway. Thank you for calling, Roberta. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi there. I'm kind of double-dutying it out here, shoveling and listening to you. Let me take you off the speakerphone, Ryan. Sorry.
Okay.
We have quite an influx of VRBOs and Airbnbs here, and I'm finding that.
Roberta, are you there?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So your comments about short-term rentals, like Airbnb?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And I noticed that in my neighborhood as well, there's a lot of people who get dumpsters, which doesn't require these folks to recycle. And I do feel that, yes, we do have a lifestyle up here. If you're up here for the fresh air and the open spaces, then you do have to apply yourself. And, little elbow grease here. Let's stay with the program and recycle.
I see. So the relationship between short-term rentals and recycling programs or waste management in general. And Jeannie Forrester, I'll ask you about this. Is this something that you are aware of? Because is there an Airbnb presence where you are in Meredith and Tilton?
There is. Not so much Tilton. It really hasn't popped up in Tilton, but in Meredith, definitely. And we actually have a committee who's working on that now because I think it was last year we started getting, especially because we have the lake, Winnipesaukee and some nice homes around the lake where people are using them as Airbnb. And we're getting complaints from the neighbors who don't want to see this happen. So we've created a committee, and they're working on how do we deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, is Airbnb an issue of any kind?
Not really, no. We haven't really experienced it much. This is probably an issue more that Jeannie and Sharon, because of their locations, experience more than we do in Londonderry. Apple picking usually isn't a week-long event, so we haven't had to worry about it yet.
Yeah, okay. So Sharon, is Airbnb an issue for you?
Well, not to my knowledge, but I certainly don't know everything. Again, because there's so much housing stock, and the prices are so low, you can buy your place and come up.
You can buy your place and come up. Okay, yeah. All right. Well, with respect to environmental issues, what about PFAS? It's been a major concern around the state, certain pockets in particular. Kevin, how's your community been impacted?
Yeah, I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of this issue, no pun intended, by the way. But it's becoming a bigger issue in Londonderry now. We're close to the St. Gobain plant in Merrimack. And of course, the PFAS can travel through the air and settle in the ground. And really, what's tipped the scale here for us in Londonderry were the new levels that DES came out with in the beginning of October, when it went from 70 parts per trillion to 12. Prior to it being 12, we really didn't have any wells affected by the Saint-Gobain issue. Now we have a lot that are affected with the new level of 12. But we're finding it not just in that area where Saint-Gobain is, but now it's popping up in other areas in town as well. And we're really looking for guidance and direction here from DES and from the legislature, because we've kind of been given this problem with not a lot of solutions. And by the way, the officials at DES that we've talked to have been great. They're responsive. Absolutely. They've come to our community, so nothing on them. But we really need some guidance and direction here on how we're going to move forward with this.
Yeah, and just to clarify for listeners who may not be totally familiar, so the state changed their standards for how much is allowed, how much PFAS or PFAS-like chemicals are allowed in drinking water or municipal water supplies. And some cities are saying that, you know, this has become an unfunded mandate. Yeah, the state is requiring this kind of testing, yeah, but not really providing anything. Although there is legislation up for debate today that would create a fund of some kind. I don't know to what extent this might be helpful for you, and I don't mean to hijack the conversation. Jeannie, you had something to say.
I was just going to say, I always get concerned having, I think you served in the legislature too, mm-hmm, right? Having served in the legislature, seeing how things can go sideways, so you get a promise, or the communities get a promise of funding, whatever the problem might be at the time, and then that funding eventually goes away and the towns are left holding the bag.
Exactly.
I think everyone wants clean, safe water, but I think we need to have the science behind it. And I unfortunately believe what happened recently was politically driven. It was motivated that way so much more than having any science behind it. And the DES, I think, fell victim to that a little bit, being pressured to come up with a standard that there was no science behind. So now I think it's headed in a better direction, and then they're backing off and saying, at least what I understand, the Superior Court had said, you need to go back and do what you said you were going to do in the first place before you come up with these standards.
Yeah, those rules are caught up in the courts at the moment. Mm-hmm. So the legislature is working on a variety of issues. So politics intertwined, of course.
Yeah, that's worse than the issue, because they came out with the standard. People kind of panicked about it. And now we're saying, oh, but it's not enforceable. So
everyone's
in a holding state right now and not knowing what to do.
I was speaking to my water and sewer superintendent, who's a crackerjack guy. And again, this is a tiny little system. I mean, the roadblocks for these draconian measures that we're expected to implement are phenomenal. The testing, the science of the testing at this level of PFAS and PFOS isn't even determined. You can't find a lab. I mean, you have to practically be in a hazmat suit, as I understand it, and I'm not being facetious, to actually go in and get the samples. Where do you take them? We don't know. I mean, never mind the actual protocols and procedures for this, which are hardly implementable at this point. A town like Holbrook that has just put, just had $6.4 million worth of water and sewer infrastructure. You know, thank you very much, USDA and DES and other entities. Now we've got to look at trying to perhaps rebuild our sewage lagoons. And I mean, it's just, it's unconscionable. Again, just like Jeannie and Kevin said, I really appreciate the fact that folks are looking out for the drinking water, but I think the horse is way behind the cart at this point.
Well, can I ask what residents in your towns are saying about this, if anything? Are they saying, like, yes, at any cost, please pay for this?
They are yet, but I think they will at town meeting when we have to ante up. And again, it may sound like small potatoes, but not with a small municipal budget. We have to ante up $15,000 for two more monitoring wells at the landfill, because these chemicals, as Jeannie and I were saying earlier, are in everything, and I do mean everything.
Kevin?
Yeah, I'm hearing from them all the time. And as I said, what's made things even more difficult now is before the court stayed the matter, at least in the area of Saint-Gobain, they were doing the well testing. Well, they've pretty much now ceased any additional well testing until the courts take the matter up again. So now you have people who want their wells tested. It's not inexpensive, by the way, to get your well tested. It can be $300, $400, $500. And they're saying, who's going to pay for this now? Am I expected to pay for this? They want to know if there's going to be municipal water lines available and who's going to pay for that. It's, I think Sharon put it perfect. The horse is way behind the cart on this one. And we're kind of left holding the bag until the state comes up with much further clarification on how to move forward on this.
And what else would you want to hear from the state? It seems like getting a lukewarm reception on building a fund to help towns cope with these new mandates. So is there something else that you would want the state to do or something you would want to hear from the governor on this today?
I think we have to have an approach to this of collaboration and cooperation, because you don't mess around with mandates from the state.
Unfunded mandates.
You got that right, Jeannie. Absolutely. And, it's daunting. We want to be in compliance. So,
but to your point, excuse me,
no, go ahead.
Sharon, to your point, Peter, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear the governor get out in front of this and understand that the potential harm that could come to communities if we don't proceed in the right direction with the science behind it and come up with something that makes sense and that delivers the clean water, clean, safe water, but is, again, there's science behind it. And I think he needs to get out in front of this and he needs to take the lead. Because it's going to impact every community.
Absolutely.
Listeners, we're going to talk about education in a little bit. If you'd like to weigh in with your comments or questions about education, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. But before we get into that, I want to bring in an email comment from Meredith, who says, yes, she was truly named for the town. Meredith from Meredith. I grew up in Meredith, she says Meredith, and back then it was still an authentic mill community, asbestos, just at the cusp of focusing fully on tourism with the building of the Mill Falls Shopping Mall. I worked in the restaurant business to put myself through college. And Meredith's question is there enough affordable housing now with the rise in real estate prices, both for young folks in the restaurant business and the middle class elderly who cannot afford the upscale condos?
No, I don't think there is. And I think that's a challenge that we face, because the value or the price of property is so high and the cost of construction is so high that I think the only way we're going to get workforce housing, and when I talk about workforce housing, I'm talking about for police, the nursing, nurses and the people who work in the hotels and restaurants. We need to be able to provide that kind of housing stock for them. But to be able to do that, I don't see how that happens unless we have some kind of a subsidy program or some kind of grant program to make that happen.
Once again, about housing, a very important issue. Listeners, we're talking with town managers from all over the state about the issues that matter most in their towns. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about education. Education is a big deal for a lot of communities and a big line item in the budget as well, so we'll be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about how the opioid crisis has impacted cities and towns throughout New Hampshire. We want to know what you think on these issues. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back.
From the seacoast to the Upper Valley, Monadnock to the Great North Woods, NHPR covers the stories that impact your community to help you stay connected to what's happening in every corner of the state. I'm Annie Ropeek, a reporter here at NHPR, and when you give $10 a month as a sustainer, you'll help support a vital resource that is statewide, regional, and deeply New Hampshire. Give today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and today on the program, we're checking in with town managers from different parts of the state on the state of their towns. That's in advance of the governor's address today. In this part of the program, we want to talk about education, the opioid crisis, how it's manifesting in different parts of the state. And we'd love to hear from you on this or anything else on your mind. Call us to let us know. 1-800-892-6477. 6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. With us today, Kevin Smith, town manager of Londonderry, Sharon Penny, town manager of Colebrook, and Jeannie Forrester, town manager of Tilton, also select board member in Meredith. And before we get into our conversation about education, I did want to bring in a comment from Karen, who wrote in to say, as a 15-year city councilor in Lebanon, one of the consistent themes has been downshifting from the state to the local level. The local property tax burden is exacerbated as the state continues to downshift costs to cities and towns. I am looking for a signal from the governor this afternoon that he understands the tremendous burden on local property taxpayers and is committed to working in partnership with cities and towns across the state to provide some relief. So that's the comment from Karen, and I seem to be getting some nods of approval from Karen's comment here at this table. Kevin and then Jeannie?
Yeah, so I mean, in municipalities, we've been talking about this for years, and that the money that's gone from the state to the local communities has been getting, it seems, fewer and fewer each year. But I do want to make a positive comment on this, and that is that in the last, I think, two bienniums, the governor and the legislature in their budgets have given, I think, $40 million back to the local communities to pretty much, you know, do with what they want to do with it, whether it goes toward lowering property taxes, infrastructure, roadway improvements, bridge improvements. In Londonderry, we've used those funds to pay a 50% match along with the state to repair an intersection that's in failure in town that has a state roadway and a town road intersection. If we didn't have those funds, this thing would have been on the 10-year highway plan for the next 10 years. Instead, it's going to get done in the next few years. And so I am very thankful to the governor and the legislature for recognizing that, you know, the downshift. We've had enough of the downshifting and for giving us
we're
those
in first
monies.
Year already. Yeah, we're not going down any lower.
Yeah. So how did it play out in Colebrook? Did the state send Colebrook any additional aid? And if so, how did
yes,
you use it?
Yes, and it was very welcome. And again, as Kevin said, you know, we are much appreciative. But it's like buying a $5 lottery ticket and you win a little bit. You can't budget around that. You can't have long term. You know, planning on that. It's appreciated, but we'd rather get a small, steady stream and not have to, you know, play like you were at the casino every year going, well, gee, is this going to get cut? I mean, rooms and meals. I mean, I know the state is under constraint also, but we just really need a level playing field. And I'll speak for my own town. I don't think we can absorb any more downshifting of funds.
Jeannie, what do you think?
Exactly what Sharon said. While we appreciate the funding that did come from the legislature and the governor, and that's nice, I would strongly advise them to be cautious about going forward and pushing down any other unfunded mandates to the towns and the cities. And they really should. It would be, I think, instructive for them to get out and talk to visit the cities and the towns and hear from the elected officials and the town fathers about the issues that they're facing. And every time they come up with some new idea, plan, and they don't fund it, how it impacts our communities, because it's getting to be more and more of a burden, whether it was the retirement system, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or rooms and meals,
right.
Or state aid. When they make these decisions, they can't make it, you know, in a vacuum. Yeah. They need to consider the towns, and they need to talk to the towns and the cities and get feedback from them. And that's something I don't think they really do.
No, and if I just may say quickly, I mean, that leads into the source of municipal funding, which is property taxes, which is education-based, and therein lies the quagmire. I mean, it's just
right. Education,
it's very discouraging.
The key example of exactly. having an obligation paid for by towns
Precisely.
That isn't quite backed up by the state. 2 decades we've been having this conversation since Claremont's 1 and 2, those decisions.
Yeah.
Is the governor, in your view, anyone can weigh on this, getting around enough in the state to talk with folks like you and getting a sense of what's happening? Kevin?
I can speak from my experience. We've had a great relationship with this governor. He's been to Londonderry many times. I do feel like he and his staff are very responsive when we go to them and need their assistance. You know, issues like Woodmont Commons, which is the largest mixed-use development in the state, they've been very helpful with that in Londonderry. Again, Exit 4A, this is something that's been in the works for literally 30 years in town between the towns of Londonderry and Derry. The Department of Transportation took over oversight in 2014, and we've finally reached a record of decision this month with Federal Highway. So his administration's been very helpful with that. So from our perspective, I do feel like the governor has been very responsive to us.
Anybody else want to weigh in on that?
I know he was up for the Dixville primary. We don't see a lot of our upper echelon public officials up north. I mean, it is a ways. We do have great relationships with our legislators and also with the state agencies that we depend heavily on. I think we could all say that. I mean, when you don't have enough staffing and the expertise, you call Concord, you call DES, you call DOT.
And I would agree that I've had a great relationship with the state agencies, whether it be DES or DOT. They're very responsive, very helpful, whether it's in Meredith or Tilton. We've been fortunate that way. We are really fortunate that we have such good folks who work for the state and who are so knowledgeable and responsive.
We got this call from Lee in Lebanon. Lee, thank you very much for calling.
Yes, good morning. There is a bill in the legislature that would permit the towns to put a tax or fee, with those dirty words, on rooms that they might, more expensive rooms that tourists might be in, up to $2 a night. And it would allow the town some local taxation flexibility for the out-of-towners at the town's discretion if they voted in favor of that. And I'm curious what the town managers feel about this.
I'm not familiar specifically with that piece of legislation. I've never been one to advocate for taxes and fees, but I do appreciate that you leave that up to the local government, that would be enabling legislation and that they could make that decision on their own. I think that's important.
Kevin, you're nodding. That's
yeah, I would agree. With. Not that, you know, it's a policy we'd want to take up, but certainly the more local options you give to the communities, you know, we appreciate that. Though I would think anything that may deter tourism isn't something a path we'd want to go down.
We get this note from Stephanie who says, I've lived in Marlow for 30 years, and for the last two school budget seasons, we have been slammed by out-of-district special education costs and steep tax increases. The tax increases have divided this small town of about 700 residents between those who support the school and those who want to slash the budget. Marlow does not have a strong tax base, and although there was a group of us meeting to brainstorm ideas and improve the tax base, that is a long-term effort. I hope Governor Sununu understands how difficult it is for small towns to pay for education under the current system. Something needs to change in the school funding system to help towns like Marlow. Maybe Colebrook is the clearest example here as well.
What's happening up north, again, you have a lot of small towns with Colebrook somewhat as the center, the service center, but different schools in different towns. Some are sending schools, some are receiving schools, but there was a lot of replication, if you will, in Canaan, Vermont, in Pittsburgh, in West Stewartstown, in Colebrook, of smaller schools that are now down to 20 students. You know, I think Pittsburgh graduates less than 15 every year. So anyway, that was the impetus for a bunch of concerned citizens and school boards to get together and see how some of these schools could be consolidated. Now, that's a fairly wide geographic service area. It didn't do too well out of the gate. I believe it's still on the table. But we're looking at a loss of or a lowering of student population. So the facilities are becoming too hard for towns to maintain once again. And I won't get on the soapbox too many times, but it's an impact to taxes, and if you have partially open buildings, they're not real easy to fund.
Now, that would be for a very rural area. What about an area like Londonderry, Kevin, where there are lots of people in one area, so maybe the tax base is broad enough to handle something that maybe Colebrook or Marlow couldn't handle?
Yes and no. I mean, in Londonderry, 72 cents of every dollar goes towards funding education in town. And certainly, special ed costs are a large cost driver of that. In full disclosure, my wife's a special ed teacher in Londonderry. And Londonderry has a great reputation for special ed programming, but that does come at a cost, and those costs are not decreasing. And so certainly as the governor and the legislature look toward priorities in the future, any additional funding in the way of putting toward offsetting that increase in cost on the local level would be very helpful.
I want to switch gears really quickly before the end of the program and talk a little bit about the opioid crisis, because that's been a concern across the state for many years. Kevin Smith, we understand that Londonderry is part of a class action lawsuit against opioid manufacturers. Can you tell us a little bit about what the town hopes to gain from that?
Well, I mean, what we hope to gain is to the extent that any of these companies were giving out these drugs in ways that they shouldn't have been, we would hope to recoup some of those costs, because it has cost us a lot in services on the local level to deal with this matter. Fortunately, in the last couple of years, we've seen it leveling off, but it's still happening. The good news is that is it increasing at the rate it was previously? No, but it's still happening too often in town. And so we thought it was prudent to join that lawsuit a couple of years ago.
With respect to costs and how it's impacting local services, Jeannie, Sharon, to what extent is the opioid crisis putting a strain on local services in your towns?
Well, I'm going to take a slightly different tack here.
Okay.
What we're finding up north is that our social service agencies have banded together along with some private citizens in an entity called the Northwoods Action Committee. And they're really bringing opioid awareness and addiction recovery support down to the local level, where they have a consortium of people that are receiving training. So that is helping with the education component of what this nightmare of drug addiction does. And we all know where it came from and how it's morphed into other things. And of course, now fentanyl is right up there too, and terrible. But what these folks are doing in the North Country is making an awareness so it can be, you know, try to get it stopped at the earliest level. The awareness is a huge component of it. Of course, in the Colebrook area, it is a border town. So, you know, there's a pretty heavy U.S. Border Patrol, DEA, state police. There's a lot of things going. Everyone's eyes are open, shall we just say that,
okay,
up there.
Yeah.
And I think every community faces it, some more extreme than the others. I think some communities, people living in communities, would be surprised at how much it might be in their community, that they're just not aware of it. To Sharon's point, I think, you know, we've been doing a lot, and Kevin as well, we've been doing a lot of good things. We've seen some improvements. I think there does need to be real focus on prevention, start out, but recovery and treatment, but I also think enforcement. You know, there was I think we kind of backed off the enforcement for a while in terms of making it, you know, going after the drug dealers. And I think we've come back around to that with Granite Hammer and those other programs to really go after those folks who are dealing these lethal drugs.
So has the state, in your view, provided enough resources to handle? Well, I'm sorry if it's a silly question, but I have to ask.
Well, you know, there's never, I suppose, there will never be enough. I served on the Governor's Commission for Drug, Prevention, Treatment, and Recovery. So, you know, years ago when they had the alcohol fund, they only fully funded it in the first year. And then after that, it was just as whatever they could find for money that they would provide for it. So I don't think it's a matter of throwing more money at the problem, because you're going to get people who don't support that idea. But the real issue is making sure that the money that we are spending is effective, and that we're having effective treatment and recovery and prevention programs, and that we have measurements so that people feel confident that we're headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we wrap up the program today, I did want to ask you once more if there's anything that you are really looking forward to hearing, that you hope that you will hear today in the State of the State address from Governor Sununu. If there was one thing, or maybe a couple of things, really briefly, maybe we'll start with you, Sharon. What do you think?
Well, it's always about money, but I do think that the issue that's risen to the top right now that keeps me awake at night is dealing with this whole PFAS issue. That's top of the list.
Top of the list for you, yeah. PFAS issue. Okay, what about you, Kevin Smith?
Yeah, to kind of echo what Sharon said earlier, the additional municipal aid in the last two budgets has been great, but we need some consistency. The reason, frankly, we used it on our roadway project was because we know it's a one-time shot in the arm for now. That's why we didn't use it necessarily to reduce property taxes, because if it only happens in one year, then it spikes the next year. That's all the taxpayers remember. So some more consistency with how much municipal aid we're going to get in the future.
More consistency in Londonderry. Okay.
And I agree with both of them. PFAS, PFOS is important. Consistency is important. Living up to the promises that you made to the cities and the towns. So you promised so much for rooms and meals. Don't cut back. You know, get to where you said you were going to be years ago and then be consistent about it. It's just like business taxes. You know, businesses, when they have that consistency, they can plan. Same thing with towns. Be consistent with the funding that you're going to give us. Be careful about the things that you legislate in Concord so that you're not pushing down, downshifting to the communities and creating more unfunded mandates to the communities. And if you do that, you're going to help us.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today and sharing your insights. Jeannie Forrester, town manager of Tilton, select board member in Meredith. Sharon Penny, town manager of Colebrook, and Kevin Smith, town manager in Londonderry. Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, remember that today at 2 o'clock, you can tune in live to NHPR to hear the governor's State of the State address. We'll also get a Democratic response immediately following, so tune in for that. Remember, this conversation continues on Facebook and at NHPR.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm, and Michael Brinley is our program manager. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoi today. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.